Welcome to the Nonfiction Writers, podcasting in a great way from all three sides of the ball. I'm Ryan Aber for a special double edition of the Nonfiction Writers with...
The Cowboy Chronicles. I am Scott Wright of The Oklahoman, bringing you the podcast who doesn't have a tricky or fancy tagline to go with it. And also Barry Trammell joining us here in studio.
Yeah, Scott, we got to start off with this. Y'all have to come up with with a good tagline. I mean, Gundy gives you all kinds of stuff to work with.
I mean,
we've got a reference to the Switzer, the Stoops, to Riley in ours. Gundy's a gold mine for this stuff.
He absolutely is. That's the problem. There's too much.
You know what I think of your idea, Bobby Hebert?
See, that's the thing, is it would have to change every week. This week it would have to be something about parenting and disciplining your children, and Barry would have had to been after the Texas game. That would have been our tagline, and it would just change from week to week. We'd never be able to settle on a good one because he tops it every couple of weeks.
Well, then you just change it every week, and we move on from there. So I think this needs to happen.
All right, we'll work on it. I'll get with Nathan. We'll break this down and see what we can develop.
Okay, but we are here to talk Bedlam football this week, 2:30 p.m. on ABC down there in Norman. And let's see, Barry, let's start off with recapping the week that was for both of these programs. You watched both of those games on Saturday, obviously. What do you take away from what we saw Saturday as it relates to moving into Bedlam and the keys for that game?
Well, you know, when I thought of Bedlam Saturday night, I thought Oklahoma State lost at Baylor for a lot of reasons, but the number one reason is because in that fourth quarter they couldn't contain Charlie Brewer. He scrambled and made plays with his feet. Made some plays with his arms after scrambling. Cowboys really just couldn't contain him. And Charlie Brewer is no Kyler Murray. So it looks like that's going to be a troubled spot for that OSU defense. Murray's impossible to contain. Everybody knows what a playmaker he is. So I just, after watching what Brewer did to Oklahoma State, I just can't see the Cowboys with any hope of slowing him down, which means – OSU, to make this a game, is going to have to score in bunches. I mean, bunches. So, people have done it before on the Sooners, but can the Cowboys? That's what the game comes down to.
Yeah, that seems to be the question every week against Oklahoma. Scott, what are the Oklahoma State folks saying about containing Kyler Murray and the difficulties that challenge presents?
Well, they know exactly. I mean, they've seen all the film. They know what this guy can do. They know what he can do throwing the ball. They know what he can do on design run plays. But the scrambling is the really scary aspect of this, because just like Barry said, when Oklahoma State was in good coverage against Baylor and Charlie Brewer, he was able to find a place to slip out and go make positive yardage. He had six running plays on the last two drives, the two touchdown drives that capped the rally. Three of them were design run plays that produced about 5 yards, and three of them were scrambles that produced almost 30 yards plus a 15-yard penalty on Oklahoma State for a late hit. So those three scrambles were really significant plays that turned the tide in that game. And Kyler Murray is not going to be a guy that goes 9 yards and steps out of bounds. He's going to go make people miss and make big plays. So Oklahoma State's got to be very disciplined in what they do. Obviously, the biggest strength of their defense is when they're able to really tee off on a quarterback and come after him and try to put pressure on him and get the sacks that they've piled up this year. They're still leading the nation in sacks. But when you start doing that kind of stuff and coming after a guy like Kyler Murray, he just sidesteps guys, and then it's going to be a whole bunch of open space for him to go do whatever he wants to do. So that's got to be the most nerve-wracking thing if you're Jim Knowles this week, trying to figure out how to keep that guy contained. Obviously they've been doing things in the last couple of weeks to help on the coverage end to make things easier for those guys, and you still got to be aware of what Brown and Lamb can do, and you can't leave all your secondary guys out on an island, but you've got to have guys in positions to come and make plays when Murray takes off running.
And to your point there, when you talk about this OSU pressure, think about the highlight of their season so far. It was before Texas, but Ripien at Boise State.
Yeah.
Very good quarterback, accurate, all those things, but not particularly mobile.
No.
And the Cowboys got all over him. So sort of a pocket passer's in trouble against the Cowboys. Texas, OSU beat them, but Texas had a good offensive game. Ellinger's mobile. Brock Purdy, mobile. Maybe the one difference is Alan Bowman for Tech, not particularly mobile, still had a nice game, but those mobile quarterbacks really give OSU fits.
Well, and Bowman, the thing Bowman did was he got rid of the ball so quick that they didn't have time to right. get to him. So that sort of changed the dynamic there. But Ryan, you've seen these guys more than I have. When you're talking about Murray and his running ability, how much of it is design run and how much of it is things breaking down and him taking off and making plays?
Well, it's both of them play a big role, and we've seen a lot of the run-pass option stuff. We've seen really the straight option become such a bigger part of their offense over the last few weeks. They ran it, I think it's three or four more times on Saturday with Kyler Murray and either Trey Sermon or Kennedy Brooks as a pitch man. And, you know, harkening back to the days of Barry Switzer, but also when plays break down, that we see Kyler Murray can make things happen with his feet. There was one play where he scrambled around and wound up, looked like he was going to be taken down for about a 15-yard loss, and all of a sudden he breaks out, gets wide, uses an official as sort of a screen man, and winds up turning into one of the most impressive 3-yard runs you'll ever see. And it's just stuff like that that make him so difficult to handle when you talk about everything else that they do offensively with, you mentioned Marquise Brown and CeeDee Lamb. Obviously, Trey Sermon's been really effective in the run game. Grant Calcaterra's played a much bigger role lately. Everything is a balancing act for a defense, and this Oklahoma offense certainly pressures opposing defenses in ways that we haven't seen in a long, long time.
You touched on the fact that that Sermon is becoming more and more effective. Obviously, it's a little bit different. It's a different backfield without Rodney Anderson. But what has made that running game so successful?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and as good as Trey Sermon has been, as good as Kennedy Brooks has been the way this offensive line has really come together since Creed Humphrey moved into the starting lineup in the fourth game of the season. He has been a really big key there with, you know, Creed Humphrey, Ben Powers, Drew Samia, Cody Ford, Bobby Evans. That group of offensive linemen, outside of Humphrey, has played a lot of games for one, and they're playing as well as an offensive line has played at Oklahoma in a long, long time, and just opening up all kinds of holes for those guys. They're giving Kyler Murray time to work. To me, that's the most interesting matchup Saturday when you talk about, you know, a grouping versus a grouping, is Oklahoma's offensive line versus what Oklahoma State does in the front seven with getting pressure. Yes, it's going to be difficult to contain Kyler Murray because of what Kyler Murray does, but Oklahoma's offensive line has been really good, and they've been really good against some of the best defenses that they've faced.
And Oklahoma State's been solid against the run. They haven't been horrible against the run. They've had a couple of big games here and there. Alex Barnes and Kansas State come to mind as one of their more difficult outings. And that was a case where you saw them, whether they just got gassed or were out of place and frustrated, but they were getting pushed around in the second half of that game. And, you know, if Oklahoma gets the run game going without having to use Murray a lot, that's a really scary proposition for the Cowboys, I think.
Well, this OU offense just has so much it can do. I mean, Lincoln Riley just unloads the playbook every week, and you can't stop everything. And they literally do everything well: throw short, throw deep, quarterback run, power runs, just the zone read. Just they do everything. And you know, if you're a defensive coordinator, you sort of throw up your hands and say, you know, it's like the Joker and Batman. Where does he get all these wonderful toys?
The
Barry, have you been? Oh, go ahead.
No, Ryan, go ahead.
But Barry, obviously Lincoln Riley is very innovative and likes to do different things, but you still get surprised when he rolls out something new out there. Like we said, we've seen the option become a bigger part of their offense recently. We saw the power game that you mentioned with, you know, two wide receivers and just a couple tight ends in there at once, a fullback a lot against Texas Tech. Is it still a surprise that they keep adding different wrinkles to this offense, given, you know, where Lincoln Riley started with the air raid heritage?
Well, it's not surprising because we've seen it and seen it and seen it, but it is fairly unique. You haven't seen this a lot in college football, where a offense can literally do everything known to man. Now, other people will come up with new stuff, but of course, that goes back to Kyler Murray, in that he's a phenomenal passer, but also the fastest guy on the field, perhaps. So, you know, when you have a quarterback with that kind of talent base, skill set, it opens up the imagination of a coach, no doubt about it.
But they're throwing passes to guys I had never even heard of when was following
fullback,
along.
Jeremiah Hall.
Yeah.
And then they're running out, walk-on wide receivers. Yeah, they really get with it. They really do on offense.
You know, guys, I was thinking about this as Barry was answering the question. So is this offense a Swiss Army knife, or is it like the Transformers? Because it can be a little bit of everything.
I'm pausing, waiting to see if Barry knows what the Transformers are.
I sort of know what they look like, and that's not, you know, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. It is a Swiss Army knife in that they do everything, though. I mean, like I said, down at Tech, we charted it. What was it? 16 plays they ran with only two wide receivers on the field.
Wow.
And those were phenomenally successful. And they threw out of it, ran out of it, and they did all kinds of things out of it. When you've got a quarterback, you can do things. This offense is more varied and more diverse than it was with Baker Mayfield. That's because the skill set of Kyler Murray is more broad-based than even with Baker Mayfield. It's sort of like, when OSU had Zach Robinson. Now, we don't like to think of the 2008, 9, 7 years as being as advanced as now, but the truth is Big 12 offensive football was pretty dang good in 2008. And OSU was right there at the top because of a quarterback who could run like crazy and throw, great. Zach Robinson spent time in the NFL. So when you have a quarterback who can do different things, it just makes the world much more easy for your offense.
Ryan, as you look at the Oklahoma State offense going against the Oklahoma defense, are there areas in particular that you, having seen this OU defense more than I have, see as some potential weak spots where they can try to attack?
Oh, there's just plenty of weak spots on Oklahoma's defense right now. Now, I think that they're better than they were, you know, in the loss to Texas and some of the struggles that they had early in the season. They weren't perfect by any means on Saturday and struggled for large stretches of that game, especially in the second quarter and then the fourth quarter as Texas Tech made the comeback. I think they're covering a little bit better, but you can still make big plays on the corners, really outside of Trey Brown. Teams have largely avoided going Trey Brown's way the last few weeks as he solidified himself as their best cornerback. But Parnell Motley seems to be a boom or bust kind of guy. If you can run the ball well, you can pick up 3 or 4 yards a pop on this team. Yes, their linebackers rack up a lot of tackles, but they rack up a lot of tackles because somebody's got to get them when you're not breaking out down the field. So there are still some weaknesses in this defense structurally with their personnel that just aren't as good as they'd like to be, although they've got some young players that have shown some life here of late. But those are the biggest things that I see. I think Justice Hill, that's going to be a really interesting matchup to see if he's able to break out and get free. Oklahoma slowed down Alex Barnes a couple weeks ago with Kansas State, but you would expect that Oklahoma State would be able to find some different ways to free up things in the run game.
Justice Hill, I was actually in the process of writing this up, and Ryan, I'm not even sure if you've seen it yet, but he cracked the seal on the Bedlam Trash Talk this week. Have you seen his Instagram post yet, Ryan?
I have not. What
got a photo of himself scoring a touchdown against against OU in Stillwater last year, and there's a couple of OU players trailing behind him as he's going across the goal line, and you know, of course, on Instagram you can add tags to different things, and he added some interesting ones like the orange turf he labeled as turf, the fans in the stands he labeled as fans, the two OU players he labeled as little boys and kids.
Ooh. Yeah. Which OU players are in that picture?
You know what? I haven't had a chance to go check last year's roster to look it up. I can tell you they're number 13 and number 20. If that rings any bells for you off the top of my head, I apologize for not being more prepared for this.
If I'm not mistaken, unless if numbers have changed, I might be wrong. But there's a good chance 13 is Trey Norwood. I can tell you that, and he's going to be one of Oklahoma's starting corners in all likelihood. On Saturday, and number 20 is Robert Barnes, who has been their best safety the last few weeks. So those are two guys who are certainly active in Bedlam this weekend, and that will be really interesting to see what those guys have to say. I'm glad Justice Hill posted that before our availability tonight, so we can maybe ask a couple of those guys about it. But you know, I talked to Trey Brown a little bit about Bedlam on Saturday after the game, and he said that he hates orange, and he said, I considered Oklahoma State at first, but I finally realized that I just hate orange. That's probably why I hate Texas too, he said. So it's good to get a little bit of juice into this game, and players who aren't afraid to say something and you know, give us the corporate line instead.
Now, let me just throw this out there to both of you, and I've got a little bit of my own opinion too. But how much does this game itself weigh into recruiting of Oklahoma players, Oklahoma high school players? Ryan?
Well, I think that it matters in the broad sense, in the fact that, you know, when Oklahoma State's able to have a little bit of success over a 2 or 3 4 year span, then it certainly helps their in-state recruiting. When Oklahoma is able to do what they've historically done, it helps their recruiting. I don't know that one game matters a ton in the big picture aspect of things. You know, how much does Saturday's game impact 2019 recruiting or even 2020 recruiting? I'm not sure it's that big of an impact, but there's no doubt that with the in-state kids especially, it matters on some level.
Barry, what do you think, have you seen kind of from a historical perspective and more recently?
Well, in regards to which one, to what?
Either side, how much you think this game affects recruiting of Oklahoma players.
Well, I think recruiting has gone more national for everybody.
Yeah.
Across the country. You know, we were talking, you know, but we were listing the Sooners and the Cowboys from Oklahoma earlier today. And, you know, as you guys know, it's a small list, smaller on OU. But it's not like in the old days they'd get some Okies and then they'd go get a bunch of Texans. Oklahoma State's been doing the same thing, you know, in its renaissance. In recent years, they both have been branching out more in other places.
Right.
So I don't know that this game impacts recruiting much. I think the overall success of seasons has a huge impact, and this game generally has a huge impact on a successful season. But I don't know that – you know, I think Oklahoma State's profile has risen significantly over the years. But the Sooners have maintained theirs, so they've got the recruiting edge nationally, no doubt about it. I don't see where you know, maybe within the state, if they were still signing 10 or 12 Oklahomans,
right?
Maybe, you know, each, maybe it would matter more. But my impression is the way it's impacted, I think, is it gives, I think the big difference is, I think it's become a more important game to Oklahoma. I don't mean more important than it is to OSU. I mean, it's risen up the scale. In the old days, Bedlam was third on the list, right, for the Sooners, right, behind Texas and Nebraska, in whichever order you wanted to do. That's gone away because of Nebraska. And frankly, in the last 10 years, Texas, despite beating OU its fair share of times, Texas has not been a Big 12 force. And the Bedlam game has been a bigger game for conference supremacy. So I think it's a big game for the Sooners. They see it as a program in their way to get where they want to be. And I think that's helped. I mean, I think that's helped recruiting at both schools, that it gives both of them another sort of a marquee game, and kids like to play in marquee games.
Yeah, and also to Barry's point about the way that the dynamic has changed with recruiting nationally and things like that. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, while they still recruit head-to-head a fair amount, I think that's become less and less, that they're not always recruiting the same pool of kids, and that's just because of what they are looking for in recruits. It's not necessarily a measure of status or anything like that. So I think that's another way that this game has changed recruiting-wise just over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you take a situation like Marcus Major at Millwood, being a guy that I had a lot of Oklahoma State fans asking me, hey, why aren't we recruiting this guy? Why aren't we recruiting this guy? And my answer was Justice Hill, Chuba Hubbard, J.D. King, and L.D. Brown, and Jameel Jeter, for that matter, because that kid looks like he's going to be pretty good. Like, I mean, they don't have a spot. They don't have everybody's a junior or younger. They just didn't have a spot for him. But you know, so it didn't become an OU versus OSU battle for the best running back in the state this year. So you know, there are some interesting situations like that that come even with in-state kids where one side might be recruiting a guy and the other isn't. So I'm with you. I still hear from people who view this like this is the 90s, and you know, that every in-state battle is about OU and OSU, and I think that it's really expanded beyond that. Like both of you guys said, this is the recruiting has expanded. There aren't as many head-to-head battles between OSU and OU for kids that they're going after, and it's sort of changed the dynamic. You know, Ryan, you were on the high school beat for a long time, and I was as well until a couple of years ago, till last year. But those moments when you got one of those OU versus OSU recruiting battles to write about or to get to know the kid that's in the middle of it was kind of exciting, because you didn't have those very often. They've really slimmed down the number of times that we have that with an in-state kid.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I always remember Ryan Broyles and all the drama around him.
Oh yeah,
you know, going into signing day when he was going to go to Oklahoma State at the last minute. Switch to Oklahoma. We saw, you know, a few other of those through the years.
Yeah, Calvin Bundage was a little bit that way, though I think OU had maybe fallen a little off before it actually got to his announcement date.
Yeah, so there's been several, but it seems like over the last few years it's become less and less, and I can't remember the last, you know, really big down-to-the-wire recruiting between those two programs.
All right, Ryan, what is the status of Oklahoma State's Oklahoma's special teams? Because it's been a huge issue for Oklahoma State. It's been a struggle in a lot of different areas. They had another punt blocked on Saturday that was returned for a touchdown. For the Oklahoma State fans that are listening, what stands out about what OU does on special teams that could be an issue for the Cowboys?
Well, I think the big thing that stands out is just the storyline going into this week about Austin Seibert. He does all three things for Oklahoma kicking-wise. He handles the field goals. He handles the kickoffs. He handles the punts. He's been really good. He's going to become Oklahoma's all-time leading scorer in this game in all likelihood. He just needs, it's 4 points to tie Michael Honeycutt. They haven't had the explosive special teams plays lately that they did early in the season when you started talking about Beamer Ball and everything that their new he's not even officially a special teams coordinator, but I don't think there's any doubt that Shane Beamer and Jay Boulware share those duties. Early on they had the punt block by Curtis Bolton. They had a couple other big special teams plays, big returns by Trey Brown. They've been solid, though, and really all not fantastic, but they haven't had any really big breakdowns either.
You know, that's the thing that strikes me about this game is how shaky both teams have been on special teams. In Lubbock, the Sooners were very poor. Two bad punt return situations by CeeDee Lamb. He lets one ball bounce and go get downed at the one-yard line. He catches another one at the 3 or 4 yard line. OSU's had their issues as well. When I think back to some of the special teams' successes over the years for both of these teams, I'm not sure that they've committed the time, resources, whatever, to special teams the way they have. I know at OU they've had their moments this year, but this is since the Justin Gilbert era, or maybe let's go Tyreek Hill. Oklahoma State is just hadn't been that great on special teams.
No, you know, you watch Chuba Hubbard when he gets those opportunities, and you sort of feel like it might be one of those moments that he could break through and take a kickoff to the house. We haven't seen it yet. The only other really reliable thing that Oklahoma State had going for it was Matt Amendola, and now he's missed 4 of his last 6 field goal attempts. Now he got put in a couple of really tough situations at Baylor on Saturday because they were going straight into that wind twice and asked him to kick 45 and 48 yard field goals, and neither one of them got to the posts. But it was a really tough win to kick in. After missing the first one, I was really shocked that they even tried the second one because it was even longer. So it was an interesting situation. But he's struggling, and you know, you get into the mental aspects of field goal kicking when you're missing kicks, and things can go south in a hurry. We've seen that over the years. So that will be interesting to see if Oklahoma State gets an opportunity to attempt a field goal. What he looks like, how confident he is. He had his struggles last year and overcame them and finished really strong, and was on the Groza Award watch list at the beginning of the year, and had hit I think 18 of 19 in a row at one point, spanning back to last season. So a really interesting situation with how that's going to develop. Now they've also had their times when they've their current special teams coordinators, I guess, Patrick Cashmore and MK Taylor, have developed some interesting schemes that have seemed to work pretty well at times. And then they've had times like last Saturday when they came up with a scheme where they shifted out of one formation and into another right before a punt, and basically had two guys trying to block 5 against Baylor and gave up a touchdown.
Yeah, that was a disaster. I just, you know, I don't know. Is it Joe DeForest? I don't know. You know, the Cowboys have seemed to slip since Joe left several years ago. It's, you know, you thought the Sooners would get good. And I'm not trying to say OU's been terrible. I mean, they've been okay on special teams before Saturday night. You thought Shane Beamer coming in, they'd just sort of rub off, if nothing else, with his dad's great legacy for special teams at Virginia Tech. But it's disappointing. Anymore, you're almost to the point where at both schools, you don't really expect any great plays out of the special teams. You just hope they don't have any disasters. That's really what it's come to.
Yeah, and for years we expected big-time special teams plays, especially out of Oklahoma. It seemed like they made one every other week, and lately that just hasn't been the case for, gosh, it's been quite a few years since those days.
Yeah. Here's what I, guys, let me, before we wrap up, here's what I'm most interested in. you know, Mike Gundy's Bedlam winning percentage is lower than OSU's overall Bedlam winning percentage.
Ooh.
That's one of the more stunning things you could ever hear because it was a terribly one-sided rivalry. Gundy gets here as head coach in 05, builds the program up, and for this decade they've been spectacular. You know, I think it's 9.6 wins average this decade. So just really, this is the golden age of OSU football. But their record in Bedlam is worse than ever. And I'm trying to put my finger on it. This year, okay. I mean, the Sooners are way better. They should win. But when these teams are even, you know, outside of the big upset in 14 and when OSU was clearly better in 11, Cowboys just don't get it done in Bedlam.
No. No, and it's really interesting. I knew that his numbers were bad. I didn't hadn't done the math to figure out exactly how bad, but that's a difficult stat to wrap your head around. You know, and Gundy was asked on Monday why their team seemed to struggle against OU, and he said, "I think they're pretty good. Have you watched them?" Which many years is valid, but there have been opportunities for Oklahoma State to win some games that they just haven't been able to win.
And in the Gundy era, Kansas State has beaten OU more than OSU has. Tech has beaten OSU more than OU has. Baylor. I mean, the list goes on and on. So something strange is going on in this series. I don't know what. Don't claim to know. But it's interesting when you look. Michigan's a blue blood program of the highest order. They don't dominate Michigan State this way.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You know, Alabama is, you know, the bluest of blue bloods. They don't dominate Auburn this way. Georgia is, you know, much better program than Georgia Tech. They don't dominate Georgia Tech. So it's just an odd occurrence. I don't have an explanation for it.
All right, Ryan, I want to knock on a couple of our regular segments for the three OSU fans that listen to this on a regular basis. I know because they've tweeted at me. I know that's my verified number. So I got to hit on a couple of quick things. Number one, actually, this is just for Nathan. There's still a big bag of candy out in the office. Nothing but Whoppers left in there. They were on the worst end of my Halloween candy list that we discussed last week. All Whoppers. Everything else is gone. So Nathan, there you go. I feel justified in that opinion now. The ding report for Oklahoma State. Our injury segment. Arlington Hambright traveled to Baylor over the weekend. Did not play. Dylan Galloway still started at left tackle. If either Hambright or Shane Richards, who did not travel, can get back this week, that really solidifies that offensive line. They need one of those two guys to get healthy. Not that Galloway hasn't been good, but both of those guys are veterans and more experienced. They need one of those guys back out there. Justice Hill appeared to be a little bit hobbled at the end of the game. Didn't play. He played two plays on the not the final series, because the final series was just the Hail Mary and a bunch of laterals. But the series before that, when they had a chance to ice the game, he only played two plays. Once he carried the ball and left the field, didn't play for a while, then came back out basically as a decoy on the fourth and three play. But obviously he seems to be fine. His Instagram game is certainly sharp. And then AJ Green was the other one that people were curious about. He was definitely looking dazed as he came off the field after giving up the game-winning touchdown. But it was hard to tell. He's a very emotional guy. It was hard to tell whether he was whether it was frustration or an actual injury. Mike Gundy said he was doing just fine and practiced on Sunday. So expected to be back and involved and in action for Bedlam. So our bowl projection segment is the only other one. But
you want me to give the OU injury rundown?
Yeah, go for it. Go for it.
Yeah, first, Brendan Radley Hiles missed the game last week after taking a big hit, or doling out a big hit, the week before against Kansas State. That knocked him out of the game. It doesn't. Lincoln Riley wasn't sure if he was going to be back this week, said it might be close, so we'll see. Without him, they had to go with Jordan Parker back there. Jordan Parker hadn't played back there in quite a while. Made some plays back there, but also struggled, especially with the big missed tackle on a 45-yard touchdown pass that they had. And also they were without Khalil Hunt, yet another secondary piece back there. Not exactly sure when he's going to return or what exactly it was. Oklahoma lost Marcellus Sutton, another running back, last week to a broken leg. He'll be out for the season. He's a senior, so that's the end of his career. He'd done some good things, but had been buried behind Rodney Anderson and then Trey Sermon. But their running back depth took a big hit with that. Now with Anderson and Sutton out, they've only got three scholarship running backs, and Trey Sermon, Kennedy Brooks, and T.J. Pledger, so they can't afford another injury there. The other one was Marquise Brown, has been a little bit hobbled for a few weeks. We haven't seen the explosiveness out of him. We haven't seen those big plays. He said that he's getting back to close to 100%, but there's little doubt that he is not quite the player that he was early in this season.
Yeah, listening to the radio broadcast as we were driving home from Waco, it sounded like he was getting his hamstring worked on basically between every series. Whenever he wasn't on the field, he was over there getting worked on. So interesting to see how healthy he is exactly, and because he's a guy that can obviously do a lot of damage in the Oklahoma State secondary. So as I was saying, the other our other regular segment is our bowl projections, which we call Give Me Liberty or Give Me Cheez-Its. Now, that doesn't really apply very well to Oklahoma, but obviously Oklahoma State is in a much tougher situation than they were a week ago, going into thinking that they were going to go into Baylor and get that sixth win and lock up bowl eligibility. Now they've got Oklahoma on the road, home against West Virginia, and then at TCU to wrap up the season, needing one more win to get into a bowl game. And obviously losing at Baylor put Baylor one more win away from a sixth win. So clouds up a lot of things for what could happen. I'm actually going with the Armed Forces Bowl right now. I think that that's where Oklahoma State's going to end up. I think the Cheez-Its are still on the table, but I got a feeling that could be Fort Worth for the Cowboys at the end of the season.
And is that a pre-Christmas bowl?
It is, the 22nd of
December. That's what I thought. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Two straight games at Eamon G. Carter Stadium.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So,
yeah, that would be interesting. For Oklahoma, it looks like right now there's really only three possibilities, although I guess there could be an outside shot at another out-large New Year's Six Bowl, but I would imagine that the possibilities are make the playoff, which they would need to win out and need some help for that to happen. They could make the Sugar Bowl, which to me is probably the most likely scenario right now, given everything in front of them, given what's on the table for them moving forward. The Big 12 obviously has the conference tie-in with the Sugar Bowl now, where it's the Big 12 champion versus the SEC champion. So you would imagine that that wouldn't be the SEC champion, because presumably that'll be Alabama, and they'll be playing in the college football playoff. But you could see Georgia there, in all likelihood, so that would be a fun matchup as well, especially after the Rose Bowl a year ago. And then the other one is if Oklahoma drops another game, doesn't win the Big 12 championship, then Alamo is sort of the low-run possibility for the Sooners right now.
All right, let me throw this out to both of you. It'll be largely irrelevant because a lot of people will be listening to this Wednesday or later. But college football playoff rankings come out tonight. We're taping this on Tuesday afternoon. Where did the Sooners land this week in the playoff rankings?
You know, I'm going to say that they stay at 7, and I think now the question is which team jumps them and which team, if there's a team that just goes behind them. I still think, looking at it, that it's going to be really hard to keep LSU from jumping behind them, given the resume, given the wins that they've piled up. I know they lost to Alabama 29-0, but everybody's losing to Alabama by about that stretch. The question is, will West Virginia leap them and drop them down a spot?
Yeah, I think it's I tend to think OU will go up to 6th, but I think it's possible that LSU stays ahead of them and drop them to 7th. I doubt West Virginia jumps Oklahoma, but it's very important that West Virginia jumps up. They were, what were they, 13th or 12th last week? Pretty far down for a one-loss team. They'll be well into the top 10 today. the Sooners really need West Virginia to get up into that eight spot or thereabouts, and keep winning. If West Virginia could beat TCU and Oklahoma State the next 2 weeks, set up a battle of 10-1 teams for the Big 12 title, for the first place in the Big 12, that would be very beneficial to the Sooners' resume. So keep an eye on West Virginia, both tonight in the rankings and Saturday, the next two Saturdays on the scoreboard.
All right, Ryan, I think that about wraps us up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. So, Scott, thanks for taking control of this thing as I was making the drive back down to the more Norman area. Barry, thanks for hanging on with us and joining us. But you can check out both of our work every day at newsok.com and every morning in the Oklahoma. So the best of OU
and OSU
coverage anyway.